Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this broadcast is originating from New Orleans, Louisiana, from the French Quarter, from the world capital of benign chaos. I believe it's appropriate to say. It's not the city care forgot. It's just they made chaos benign. They tamed it. They tamed the force of chaos, which, of course, science is still trying to figure out. I'm here to borrow a cup of electricity from my friends back home in California. We're collecting some kilowatts, just doing a little pledge drive of our own. Any spare wattage that the folks here in Louisiana, and of course they have a lot of spare wattage here because it gets dark so much later, don't you know? So AA batteries, anything, we're gathering and then going to ship them back to L.A., I think through the gas pipeline. I think the pipeline can carry gas and electricity at the same time. We'll find out. Ladies and gentlemen, Edison International collected $1.4 billion in, and I don't understand this phrase, but excess tax payments from a little thing it owns called Southern California Edison, and used that money to help fuel, no, that's just writer speak, that doesn't mean any fuel was used, to help it in its aggressive acquisitions by other companies that it owns. This according to the chief executive of Edison International before a legislative committee in Sacramento. Because everybody was wondering, where did all that money go? Edison Chairman John Bryson acknowledged the excess tax payments from the utility during the last 5 years were spread to Edison's other newer companies. Congratulations, boys. You're rich and helped fund purchases of power plants around the world. Legislators are angry and say the money should come back to California to pay for electricity rather than make Southern California Edison threaten bankruptcy to try to get some money out of the state, meaning the taxpayers, meaning the people. Obviously, this story is building and growing. There are petition drives by groups around California to put stuff on the ballot. Always a good idea, you know, because we something complex like the electricity system, we should diddle around with on our own through petition drives, because it can't make it worse. But I just want to, I mentioned a few weeks ago, and I was upbraided for doing so, that blame lazy journalists, and that was a lazy usage on my part. The journalists weren't lazy. It was the assignment editors and the producers for whom they work who are not only lazy, but negligent. Because what they did, what the news directors at every television station in Los Angeles, and I believe in San Francisco, did as well, was a few years back to shut down their state capitol bureaus in Sacramento. Stopped the coverage of what was going on in the state capitol because people didn't care. Nobody cares what's going on in the state capitol. Ah, that's boring stuff. Let's get to some murders. So, of course, when this would explain why Steve Peace, even though he has announced that he's not going to be running a statewide campaign as he was originally planning because it was going to be political suicide, he's the guy who wrote California's electricity deregulation plan, why his name is not yet household mud throughout California is because nobody covered the story. So, ladies and gentlemen, all I'm saying is, ouch, all I'm dropping is everything that I've got on my desk. But all I'm saying is, if and when the lights start going out, just remember who turned the lights out first. Channels 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm gonna number, do my number, hold my baby all the summer.
Well, hello again from New Orleans, Louisiana. This is Le Show, and I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you there, too. The anger may or may not have subsided about the results of the Florida. Oh, let's be generous. Let's call it an election. But the ridicule has just begun. That I can report to you from here in the French Quarter, where last night one of the early Mardi Gras parades rolled through the quarter, rife with naughty jokes at the expense of George W. Bush, as if people thought he wasn't the legitimate president or something. I don't get it, but I'm just reporting. You know, just my way of getting a story for you. Meantime, of course, as George W. pushes his tax cut and his missile defense and all those things, we are now realizing what was obscured during the campaign, the election campaign, which is the real issue, the real choice given to Americans. We're realizing that not so much by the candidates themselves, but by their partisans and what their partisans say. And the choice, apparently, judging by what Democrats and Republicans say, is between a smart man and a good man. That's, you know, the Republicans keep saying, well, he's a good man. He's got a good heart, as George W. likes to say of people. And the Democrats just keep pointing fingers at the fact that George W. Bush is a man, to say he's a man of few words, see right there, that's like what he would do. Now, just a few thoughts on the subject, ladies and gentlemen. It was the smart guys that got us into the Vietnam War. And I say that as a smart guy. So, you know, I lost a little faith in my brethren after that. On the other hand, if you're looking for saints, about the least likely place to find them is in anybody's political system. That's not where the saints hang out. I'm not talking about the football team. I'm talking about the really good people. I think, you know, really, the real choice, the real contrast, and this is something that every husband and every wife or every parent and every child can identify with. So maybe the choice is between, or the contrast, the changeover, the transition, from a guy who crams and does everything in the last minute and a guy who does everything on time. George W. Bush's meetings start and finish on time. Bill Clinton got into this pardon mess, I'm convinced, because he just did it the way he did everything else. In the last minute, cramming, staying up. Oh, God, give me the thing. Where's the report? Forget the report. Let's just do it. And, you know, so now he has on his hands the sloppiest exit since the Raiders left Los Angeles. And he's got the worst excuse since, it just depends on what your definition of is, which is, we didn't know they weren't ours. This is apropos of the silverware and the furniture. We didn't know they weren't ours. They didn't. The receipts didn't say who the thing. So now again, none of this sniping would be directed at a pair of presidents, two for one, president and first lady, who had milked the system so clearly that by the time they left office, they didn't need gifts. You know, these guys, if they were really corrupt, they would have been like Lyndon Johnson. And no, that's all right. The gifts don't need it. Thanks are just the same. Give it to somebody who needs it. But I still think, you know, as ex-presidents go, here's Jimmy Carter, who's building houses for the poor. And here's Bill Clinton, who's furnishing a house for the previously poor. It's not exactly the same thing. But as I say, I think the contrast is more than anything between a guy who crammed. You know, it's just a stylistic thing. He stayed up late. He did an all. You do recall he did an all nighter. His last night in office. Now, there was, you know, a lot of. You could say, well, why didn't you just start the pardon thing rolling earlier? Well, that's just not his style. You see what I'm saying? So, the fight. I know Ralph Nader said there wasn't a choice, wasn't a real choice. I think we're seeing the definition of a race next time, between a guy who comes on time, starts every meeting on time, finishes every meeting on time, and a guy who just kind of does it whenever he likes. That's a choice worth spending a billion or two in taxpayer or contributor money on commercials on our fine broadcast stations for, don't you think? National Public Radio has signed a contract with an outdoor advertising agency to hang ads on the east wall of its headquarters building in Washington, D.C. Each month, NPR now receives a monthly minimum payment from the company they leased it to, an amount that will go up substantially when an advertiser is found and an ad is installed, according to a memo obtained by the Washington Post. The total revenue will be significant. The wall of the NPR building on which the ads will be sold is the wall that faces the Capitol building of the United States. Says an NPR spokeswoman, this is an arrangement that creates revenue for NPR and allows us to enhance our services while reducing reliance on contributions. There is nothing morally or ethically wrong with this arrangement. The spokeswoman says the ads will be subject to NPR approval and will be consistent with the standards we apply throughout NPR. Standards for what? They don't have ads. What standards would you have for ads if you don't have ads? She didn't know the name of the advertising agency, nor would she disclose how much NPR will make for the ads. The contract was signed, she disclosed, recently. Thanks for the factual information. So please give to your local ad on the wall, won't you? This is Le Show. I just had to leave that pause for our good friends at the Home of the Homeless to go off and fundraise. By law, I'm continuing with this story now. NPR is forbidden to air advertising on its airwaves. You know that it takes those corporate credits. NPR gets 4% of its budget from Congress. An additional 35% comes from sponsorships. The rest comes from you. Why don't you buy an ad on the wall? See, then they would avoid all of this controversy. Just you out there. Just pony up, won't you please? Buy that ad. You'll be glad I told you to do so.
Allá en el 89, un grupito se formó y la gente no creía que era todo con la voz. Marciano en el contrabajo, Abelito en el bongo, también la tumba, la paila y un poquitico de voz. Le siguen René y Reinaldo, las trompetas y el trombón. Reinaldo también las claves y René percusionista menor. Luisito está gozando, tocando su trompetón. También toca buen cencerro y tiene buen corazón. Yo, Carlos, el solista, común y corriente soy. También resueno las bailas con sentimiento y amor. Y ahora que nos conoces, podemos gustarte o no. Pero te digo que Sampling te canta de corazón.
Esto es Sampling, caballero, esto es Sampling.
Te lo oigo.
Ladies and gentlemen, actress Sandra Bullock has purchased a Hollywood Hills home for about $1.5 million. Rip out the front page, won't you, please? She bought a home with three bedrooms and about 3,000 square feet. Her new home is contemporary in style, but uses wood extensively in its interiors. The property also has a pool, spa, and city views. She's been living recently in Austin, Texas. She also has a home near Jackson, Wyoming. She's a native of Arlington, Virginia. It also tells you where her mom and dad came from. This is the real estate column of the dog trainer in my hometown. Still trying to figure it out. Actor Ving Rhames has settled into a Brentwood home he bought before the holidays. Well, okay. You just found out. For just under $5 million. He grew up in Harlem but studied at Julie. He bought a Mediterranean-style home on slightly more than an acre behind Gates. Not Daryl Gates, with five bedrooms and about 10,000 square feet. Built in the 20s, the home also has a pool, cabana, tennis court, and park-like grounds. I guess meaning that strangers throw litter there. And writer, producer, director David Duclos, you've never heard of this guy. He wrote and produced The Odd Couple, Happy Days, and Laverne and Shirley. But what's news is he's listed his home, his estate, excuse me, at $11.5 million. Guy wrote Laverne and Shirley. And Punky Brewster, and Malcolm and Eddie. Okay, let's be fair. $11.5 million. He and his wife decided to sell the home, which they built in 1995, to scale down. It's a little late. He's probably the reason we're short of electricity in California. Personally responsible. The chateau-style estate. Well, if you're writing Punky Brewster, you got to have a chateau. Let's face it. Where else are you going to get your reference points from? You know, you write about what you know. It's on 4.5 acres of landscape grounds in a gated community. A tree-lined drive leads to the house, which is on a hilltop and has golf course views. This is, oh, by the way, speaking of golf courses, another nail in the coffin of Bill Clinton's post-presidential reputation. He golfed this week on an exclusive golf course in Florida near Miami, where they don't allow... Well, they allow very few Jews and no black people, even though the development where the golf course is located has Jewish residents. A lot of people have views of the course that they can't belong to. I met a couple people like that one time and just stared at them. Parents of a friend lived, their backyard basically was a golf course they weren't allowed, of a country club they weren't allowed to join. They could watch all these people all day long golfing and go, hi, we're the people you won't let in. The house also has five-bedroom suites and 11.5 baths in 18,000 square feet. If you're writing Punky Brewster, you need a lot of bathrooms, apparently. Among its other features are an elevator, a formal library with mahogany cabinets for all those bound Laverne and Shirley scripts, and a fireplace, a pine-paneled family room with a fireplace, a pub with fairway views, and a foyer with sweeping staircase and crystal chandelier. Yeah. Time to scale down. The master suite is divided into his and her wings, each with armoires and cabinets, marble steam showers, and whirlpool baths. His wing also has an office kitchenette, not an officeette, a kitchenette, and a balcony. Her wing has leaded glass windows, twin walk-in closets, and a chandelier. It also has an 1,800-square-foot guest house, as well as pool, spa, five-car garage, sport court, and motor court. Two of the most popular shows on daytime television right now, of course, sport court and motor court. And speaking of television, what's the audience potential of a proposed new reality show in which host Donald Trump challenges contestants to spend $1 million in half an hour? Show creator David Anson Russo is about to find out when he shops to networks next week. Billionaire, a reality show hosted by Donald Trump from his perch atop some building he named after himself. Russo, what are his credentials? He's the creator of Combat Missions. The hell is that? It's an upcoming reality series you haven't seen yet. So, of course, this is his time to sell another one before the first one tanks. Billionaire would be the first regular TV role for Trump. His role will be to usher in a new group of millionaires into his exclusive club, the ones who survive the surprisingly difficult task of finding ways to spend the cash in 30 minutes. Well, buy David Duclan's house. That's a phone call. That's 5 minutes. You've spent $11 million. You've won the or at least get closer than three competitors on the same mission. The show will select four contestants each week to take the million-dollar challenge, with all of them asked to compete on the spur of the moment when they're under duress. Okay, here's my clue. Call David Duclan's realtor. Seen atop Trump Towers, Donald will bookend the show, looking at a bank of monitors that will show the four contestants. Yes, that's right. You get to watch Donald Trump watching TV. That's reality. The show has a premise as irresistible as Indecent Proposal, giving people 30 minutes to realize the American dream. The American dream is spending $1 million, apparently, according to this guy. I like the selection process, says Trump, because they'll be taking people in strange situations. They'll be enlisted when they're about to get married, or there'll be a husband in a delivery room waiting for the birth of his child. He can take a pass or say, honey, I'll be back in an hour. Billionaire creator Russo is an artist and artist. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And author, who's written 11 books for Simon & Schuster and launched about 60 licensed products. Well, then he's got to be an artist. Only artists could do that. Combat Missions pits the elite in military and law enforcement groups against each other on a clandestine desert set. That's the show you haven't seen yet. A clandestine desert set. They build a desert? Can we build a desert right here? We're in a TV station, ladies and gentlemen. Let's build a desert right here. Let's try it. In Millionaire, here's the thing. Contestants cannot use the phone. In Billionaire, the contestants can't use the phone or computer to broker a transaction, and are limited to a $200,000 cap on any single item. In a studio, what can you buy? You can buy the equipment. Buy the studio. They've just updated to digital. They'll be glad to sell it. There will be incentives and bonuses which allow contestants to buy extra minutes to spend their cash. The contestant who spends the most gets to keep the loot or the monetary equivalent. Says Trump, in a very scary pledge, I will make sure I devote enough time to the show to do it right. Because otherwise. And ladies and gentlemen, here's a startling piece of information. This from the British press. Young people with high self-esteem are more likely to take illegal drugs than those whose self-confidence is low, according to new research. The findings contradict the conventional wisdom that drug taking is most prevalent among anxious or insecure youth looking for an escape from poor conditions or a way to feel better about themselves. Instead, up to 27% of young people with high self-esteem had used illegal substances, compared with only 20% of their less self-confident peers. Experts say the new research means an overhaul of drug education programs is necessary. Well, obviously, the approach is just to make all kids feel like crap. But we're doing it for your own good. You're a jerk. You're a stupid, ugly little jerk. There. It's for your own. It really is for your own good. On most occasions, the drug tried was marijuana, though solvents and amphetamines also were used by respondents, says David Regis, who led the research team. Hey, Regis. Unfortunately, he says, the results blow a hole in the simple moral fable that young people are led into the paths of righteousness by high self-esteem. Two factors are thought to explain the results. More confident children are more likely to be sociable, have more money, really? And thus have more opportunity to experiment with drugs. And they are also more often willing to indulge in risk-taking activities, ranging from extreme sports to Class A drugs. Research reveals that though youngsters who describe themselves as experimental cigarette smokers often have low self-esteem, those who call themselves committed smokers have high or average self-esteem. So, as I say, you know, teach the kids that they're crap. And finally, in the top of the week's news, how are we doing on a Florida election? How's that count going? If Orange County, not the one in California, the one in Florida, had conducted a hand recount of all of its ballots that the machines could not read, Al Gore would have gained 203 extra votes. That's the result of a new hand count released this week by Orange County election officials. And according to an Orlando Sentinel examination of the rejected ballots, there were clear presidential votes on 799 ballots that the machines could not count. This was not, by the way, the Vote-O-Matic. This is, they mark paper ballots with special pens, and the machine couldn't read the 800 ballots because the people didn't use the special pens. They used the ordinary pens. Talk about low self-esteem. Use the special pen next time. The findings show that George W. Bush would have gained 298 votes. Gore would have picked up 501. That would have given Gore a net gain of 203 votes. That was more than a third of Bush's final, I'm going to be metaphorical here, winning margin in Florida. So, the most, as I say, the most common reason for rejection was because voters didn't use the special pens. According to the Orlando Sentinel's research on the count so far, hand counts in 16 counties, small counties, that use mostly paper ballots that basically favored Bush, suggest that hand recounts would have helped Gore in those counties far more than Bush. These are Bush counties. Gore would have done really well. According to that count, hand counts in those 16 Bush counties would have given Gore a net gain of 569 votes, enough to wipe out Bush's margin of victory statewide. We hear that George Bush does not like to hear Hail to the Chief played when he enters the room. Now we know why.
Coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find a lot of cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, cause they've got to fill their quota. And the way things are, I guess they never will. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. No tea or tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice for the vendors down in Santos. They say no, no, no. Politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a great big $50 bill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You date a girl and find out later she smells like the percolator. Her perfume was brewed right on the grill. Why, they could percolate the ocean in Brazil. When your ham and eggs need savor, coffee ketchup gives them flavor. Coffee pickles way outsell the deal. Why, they put coffee in the coffee in Brazil. You'll see, no potato juice, no sirree, no tea or tomato juice. For the renters down in Santos, they say no, no, no. You'll add to the local color, serving coffee with a cruller. Dunkin' doesn't take a lot of skill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. And though the price goes high and higher, still I call my local buyer. Tell him that I'll pay, I always will. I got to have that special coffee from Brazil. Other folks are drinking chocolate, fizz and fazz and other pop, but I still got to have my caffeine drill. A very special blend of coffees from Brazil. You'll see, I thought I told you, no potato juice, no sirree, no tea, not tomato juice. For the vendors down in Santos, they say no, no, no. So when you do the bossa nova and your cup it runneth over, just make sure it's coffee that you spill. They got No siree, no tea, or tomato juice. Just because El Presidente, he said no, no, no. A politician's daughter was accused of drinking water and was fined a brand new $100 bill. They got an awful lot of coffee, mucho, mucho coffee. They got a lot of coffee, oh, a lot of coffee. They got a lot of coffee in Brazil.
It's time for the Health File, a regular house call with Dr. Manfred Weitzner. Dr. Weitzner is a fellow of the American Academy of Television and Radio Doctors, as well as a practicing attorney and a fair to middling trombonist. Now, Dr. Weitzner.
Thank you very much, Tim, and welcome back, dear listener, to the sturdy and opaquely walled confines of the Health File. You know, it is a new month, and those are good times for taking stock of our own health profile. It's a good time to ask ourselves, are we smoking too much? Are we eating too much? Drinking too much? Not exercising enough? And if the answers to all these questions is, I don't know, then I do think we've got some catching up to do with ourselves. Two questions I've been asked most often this week. Dr. Weitzner, will fish oil do everything they say? And two, Dr. Weitzner, did Liberace have AIDS? And this reflects the broad spectrum of interests that can be encompassed within the increasingly capacious boundaries of the Health File. And so, in answer to those two most asked questions this week, nothing will do everything they say, and I don't know, but you don't get an encephalopathy from kissing doorknobs.
You're listening to Dr. Manfred Weitzner and the Health File. Although he cannot answer your letters personally, Dr. Weitzner does enjoy reading them aloud to his friends. Here again, Dr. Manfred Weitzner.
Thank you, Tim. And, you know, the more we learn about the mind-body connection, the more we realize it is an enduring and persistent motif woven into the cardboard tapestry of the Health File. Stressful situations can and do produce physical as well as psychical symptoms. Dr. Lyle McCorkindale was trained as a psychologist, got a second degree as a neurologist, and then decided he could help the most people by becoming medical editor of a television program in Dallas, Texas, called Good Morning Dallas. Good morning, Dr. McCorkindale.
Thank you, Dr. Weitzner. It's a pleasure to be here. As well as, I guess, a kind of opportune time.
It is that and then some, Dr. McCorkindale. You know, you've spent much of the last 10 years studying a particularly stressful kind of situation and its effect on the participants therein. What can you tell us about this study and what you've learned from it?
Well, I received a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to study the effects of the fundraising drives that their stations conduct from time to time. The effects on personnel in public television and radio stations.
These are the good people that we hear and see on the air asking us for money to support programs like, well, like this one.
That's correct. These people are under a great deal of stress, although we found a lot of it is self-induced.
From worry?
Well, very often they'll get into a sleep-deprived mode for several days before the drive officially starts. They'll subsist on donated food, which turns out very often to be very high carbohydrate-type substances, croissants, cookies, fajitas.
Well, now, of course, more carbohydrates and less protein per se is a recommendation we've often made here on the Health File, but what I do think you're saying is that there is a cluster of behaviors, are you not?
Well, Dr. Weitzner, the psychological effects we found are the most noticeable. There's a great deal of guilt-inducing behavior required during these events, trying to promote guilt within the audience, and the participants feel a tremendous amount of guilt about having to do that, and that begins to take interesting forms. For example, a person will spend hours on the air, and we've seen this in New York and also in Chicago. They spend hours on the air saying something on the order of, well, you pay for your newspaper, you should pay for your public TV or your public radio. And then in the advanced state of stress that they get themselves into, I've seen that same person take a newspaper out of a coin box and not pay for it.
Isn't that something? Now, you did, You did mention sleep deprivation before. That has symptoms all its own.
Yeah, well, everything does. Uh-huh. Again, you tend to get compensatory behaviors. Normally, you associate lack of sleep with fatigue or slowing down.
Of course.
Something like that. In many of these cases, though, we see it leading to almost a kind of a manic frenzy, a denial of fatigue, which uh-huh. eventually is just that much more draining on the system. There's an intense effect we found on the time sense of the individual, an impending sense of doom, relieved by brief periods of, again, this kind of manic relief, and then just as quickly the sense of impending disaster returns. And this lasts for weeks or even months after the event itself is over. Well, we had a man down in Dallas who developed the habit of yelling at his wife every night to hurry up with dinner. They only had 5 more minutes on the matching fund, and this went on literally for months.
Isn't that something? Now, of course, the mind-body connection is a link that crops up often in connection with the mind and the body. Any purely physiological symptoms of what you call the
thumb drive syndrome? Well, yes, there appears to be a systemic hearing loss that we've tracked over time. We found a substantial number of people involved in these kinds of stresses that they just start to lose the ability, apparently, to hear other people talk. They lose the ability to recognize cues that we normally use to tell us that it's okay to start talking. That is to say, a time when the other person present in a conversation had stopped talking. They don't seem to have that anymore.
Uh-huh.
And just, you know, as an example, Dr. Weisner, you try to talk while I'm talking, you find it's very difficult because that's a pretty strong cue that you learn to recognize.
Uh-huh.
This takes a while to come back.
It is difficult indeed. Now, this is a unique kind of stress situation, Dr. McCorkendale, or in fact, are these findings something that can be applied by every person who finds him or herself nestled within the fold of the health file?
Well, that I think, Dr. Weisner, is the $64,000 or however much the amount is question. We wanted to use a private charity telethon as a kind of control situation to verify the universality of these findings.
Of course.
Most of the big telethons we found nowadays are pre-recorded about 90% of the time, very, very highly produced affairs, so there isn't the same kind of stress produced in the participants.
But the general rule might be, take it easy, it's only money.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I'd say the minimal recommendation I might make for people who find themselves in these kinds of stressful activities is bring some fruit from home.
The effect of pectin on moods, a topic we'll have to leave for a later visit. Dr. McCorkendale, thank you for an all-too-brief enough visit today.
My pleasure.
And, dear listener, until next time, remember, health is a way of being. Sickness is a way of being unhealthy. Next time, more on fish oil, but now it's time to gently close the cabinet and put away the health file.
Behind, I wish those days would come back. once more. I wish those days never had to go. I wish those days would come back once more. I wish those days never had to go. I love them so.
All right, some more news of the media, because it's so, you know, it's a media world, isn't it? Dr. Pepper, the soft drink, not the doctor, has put the squeeze on CBS over a recent edition of Late Show with David Letterman, in which David Letterman compared the soda to sewer water. As part of the deal with the Plano, Texas-based company, CBS said it would never air the offending episode again. Ever. A CBS spokesman declined comment on whether the network had agreed to the spiking of the episode. But a spokesman for the soft drink company said, that's my understanding. The trade paper Media Week, which broke the story, also reported the price tag of a Dr. Pepper commercial during the Super Bowl was steeply discounted as payback for the David Letterman crack. You know, I'd make that deal. I'd pay David Letterman to make a bad crack out of me so I could get a bad crack about me so I could get a cheaper commercial in the Super Bowl. I'm not saying that's what they did, but that's, you know, if it was in politics, that would be the assumption drawn, wouldn't it? About the wonder world of digital television, ladies and gentlemen, a couple of pieces of information. The cost, you know, the public televisions, the fine public television, not to pick on public broadcasting too much this week, but the fine public television stations have been having such a hard time with the cash outlays needed for the switch to digital television so that they can have six channels on which to run fund drives, that they've gone to the state legislatures asking for the taxpayers to put up the money for them to buy all the new wonderful digital equipment. Now, apparently facing frustration in that, three New York area public television stations have announced they're considering the unthinkable, merging. China is preparing to go digital. We regard this as a serious natural resource issue. If China succeeds in developing its own digital TV standard, some experts say, according to a Chinese official, it might be able to leapfrog the U.S. and European standards. Political disputes dogging those standards have made technology upgrades difficult. It's political disputes that have made it difficult for us to go digital, ladies and gentlemen. Political disputes, not the fact that the audio and the video don't arrive simultaneously and the antenna has to be put on the floor. That's, well, I guess in China's terms, that's political.
Welcome to the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're the other guys. We have to try harder. Now, for another hour of the most hardcore sports talk radio on the planet, here's your host. We call him the coach because he had a coaching job for a few months a couple of decades ago. Here's Dick Vitale.
Hey, everybody. I'm happier to be back with you than an NBA superstar with a guaranteed sneaker contract. Happier than a baseball Annie with a prepaid hotel room. Happier than a Division I NCAA coach with an Alzheimer's athletic director. Welcome to another hour of Dickie V's Sports Crib. And we got a guest in the house, baby. I call him my lean, mean guesting machine. He's here to talk about the newest pro sports league. I got to tell you, this is the best sports idea I've heard since the open bar in the press box. He's the development director for the World League of Wrestling, which would normally not be a subject for a legitimate sports show like this one. But wait till you hear what he's got to say. He's Virgil O'Brien. Virgil O'Brien, a true son of the sod.
I'm Irish, if that's what you're getting at, Dick.
Hey, what I'm getting at is that I'm so tickled to have you on the program, Virgil, that my goosebumps have got goosebumps. Listen, my man, as I said, pro wrestling cuts no ice in this particular facility, but you guys are doing something so different that it sounds not only legit, but totally familiar. You gotta tell us what up.
Well, Dick, we at the WLW, we're sort of the little guys of the wrestling universe, so we keep our eye on what the big guys are doing.
You gotta!
So when a Time Warner sells off a world championship wrestling, we wonder, hey, if we were owned by a big corporation, would we be next?
Mm.
And when a Vince McMahon starts a new football league, we turn around and ask ourselves, hey, can we be next?
Almost the same question in both cases.
Yes, sir. Isn't that something?
Hey, if you ask me, it's something else. So anyway, baby, are you next?
I'll tell you one thing, Dick. We ain't starting no new football league.
Amen to that.
What we are is launching the future baseball. What the WLW is doing is saving this great game of baseball from itself, from the so-called major league owners and the so-called major league rules that have turned it into a game that only PBS would care about.
Hey, looking at their broadcast package recently, that may be where they're ending up. So, Virgil, my man, let me smell what you guys are brewing.
It's called X-League football, or XLB.
XLB.
And before you start in with the hard case questions, Dick, we're not like the XFL, where they say the X doesn't stand for anything, and then they turn around and say it stands for extreme. In the case of the XLB, we know what we stand for. The X stands for extra fan satisfaction.
Hey, listen, Virgil, I don't care what the name of the game you play is. Fan satisfaction is the name of the game. Lots of rules changes coming our way.
Oh, Dick, it's a return to the great old tradition of Smash Mouth baseball. First of all, It's a summertime game, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So why are these guys wearing polyester imitations of heavy flannel uniforms? So you are going to see XLB players in brightly colored bicycle pants, or we call them X-pants, and nothing else. No shirts, no helmets, none of that girl softball stuff.
Hey, this would be something new. Baseball players whose bodies are actually in shape.
You got it. We call it bodball. Then you asked about rule changes, mm-hmm. Dick. We're yep. putting in a clock. 5 seconds to get off a pitch. Nobody's going to be in our broadcast booth telling stories between pitches. You want stories? Go rob a library.
Yeah.
Now, additionally, Dick, in so-called Major League Baseball, the pitcher can hit a batter.
Hey, but he's not supposed to.
Well, that's interesting, ladies and gentlemen. We had a death in the family. One of our fine CD machines died. We might have to rejoin that special feature the very next time you hear Le Show. Yeah, I'm still here. I haven't, no bodily damage was experienced during this recent incident. Not saying that there shouldn't be, but, you know. It's not really satisfying to kill a CD machine when it's already died. Ladies and gentlemen, just to show you how different media treat different events, that story about the medication used or potentially used for a cure for sleeping sickness being diverted to a cosmetic cream that was read on this broadcast a couple of weeks ago. Same story appears in the New York Times this past Friday, paying tribute to Bristol-Myers for reviving the manufacture of that substance so it can be used as a cure for sleeping sickness. I don't know who's right, I'm just saying. Doctors Without Borders were complaining, and the New York Times is pointing with pride. Your choice. Your dealer's choice. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes... I said it was benign chaos, didn't I? Sometimes it's not. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like knowing how to spend $1 million in a half hour if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, I will tell you, the CD machine that failed was made by Techniques. A long time ago.